Okay, so maybe we'll start. So there are really, really three reasons for this shiur I'm going to be giving now. Okay, I just need to put this. Sorry.
Oh.
Let's put this here. Okay. Okay. So as was written on the board, the first reason for the shiur. He's Eloi Nishmas, my father. His name was Yehuda Chaim ben Aaron. And the shiur, the schus of the Torah that we're going to learn here together should be for Eliyah, for his neshama. And I really do appreciate everybody here coming and participating in the limud that we're doing on the yortzeit. The second reason for the shiur is actually for a refuah shlema for a dear friend of mine who's a Bulgar yeshiva who learned here, and he's a friend of the yeshiva and a talmud of the yeshiva. His name is Rav Gabriel Pinchas ben Devora Zlata, who unfortunately right now is not well, and so there's actually a series of shiurim happening in a number of locations each week for his refuah shleima, and so this shiur also is going to be for a schus for his speedy refuah mit Hashem, which should happen soon. The third reason is more nogea to you guys, and I specifically chose a topic that I think is very important at this point in the year. I'm going to be talking about the topic of kina, of jealousy. I think that what happens at different points in the year, I think it is Nogea now, we're really in the thick of Chorav Zman, that as guys progress in their learning, in their Avodas Hashem, there's a lot of looking over one's shoulder, thinking about how is another guy doing, how am I doing in relationship to somebody else, a lot of comparing to one another. I think we're all guilty of this, even people who are not in yeshiva, but I know the crowd that I'm talking to, and I think this is nogea for all of us, and so I want to understand the sugya of kina, what it's about, how Chazal saw it, what we can understand about it and do about it. And I want to open by asking three questions, and hopefully this year we'll answer these three questions and maybe some other questions too. The first question I want to answer, of all of the bad midos that we could think of, there are a lot of them, right? We could think of kas, we could think of gaiva, we could think of taiva, we could think of all kinds of sinna, right? How is it that kina, jealousy, and for now I'm going to use the words envy and jealousy interchangeably, but perhaps we'll make a distinction later on. How is it that this one mida, this one negative character trait, made it into the top 10 of the Aseret HaDibros, right? Of all the Aseret HaDibros, we really only have one that pertains to midos. And after we talk about believing in Hashem and Shabbos and Kibbutz Av Eim and all of the lavim, we have right there at the end, number 10, is lo tachmod. Do not covet what somebody else has. Do not desire, do not be jealous of what somebody else has. There are a lot of negative midos that a person can have that we all have to work on. How is it that jealousy is so important that it kind of beat out any other negative characteristic and made it into the top 10 into the Aseret HaDibros? That's question number one. Question number two is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in Perek Dalid, Mishnah Chavchet, that says that kina is one of the three things that is motzi en es ha'adam min ha'olam. Kina is one of the three things, taiva and kavod are the other two, we're not going to talk about those tonight, that is motzi en es ha'adam min ha'olam, that takes a person out of the world. The second question is just, what does that mean, that it takes a person out of the world? How does it do that? What is it about kina that takes a person out of the world? What is that, out of what world are we talking about? That's question number two. Question number three is that in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, we know that any word that shares a root with any other word is going to have similarities in their definitions. Okay, so the root of kina is kuf, nun, aleph. We also know that there is a very positive midah called kanaut, right? Kanaus, we have it by Pinchas, where Hashem actually praises him for being a kanoi, which is in English usually translated as being a zealot. We'll have to understand that too. But how is it that kina, which is related at the shoresh to the word kanaus, can also be something positive? How can a negative midah also be something positive? And what do kina and kanaus share in common? Okay, I want to answer. I'm trying to answer those three questions. So, starting out, I think it would be helpful to look at the parsha of Pinchas actually and understanding the positive side of kina before we can delve into the negative part of it. So, in understanding what happened really by Pinchas, we're all familiar with what happened with Pinchas. There's a terrible chait going on with Zimri, the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, with Kuzbi, who was the Midianite princess. They know that they were involved in one of the worst chataim in full public view. And Pinchas killed both of them, and Hashem gave him the bris shalom, gave him a tremendous reward for this act. So in trying to understand what Pinchas did, I want to lay down three axioms. Okay, the first two of these are based on the Maharal, and then we'll understand, I think, where kina fits in. The first axiom, the first point that we have to understand and take for granted, the Maharal talks about this. It's in Tiferes Yisrael. He says that when Hashem created the world, we know that He did so with a very specific seder, a very specific order. There isn't one thing that Hashem created in this world that was done in a haphazard way. Now, some of the order that Hashem set up, we understand as to why He did it the way that He did it. He was megala some of that. He revealed some of that to us, why I laid out the framework of the world, set it up the way that I did. Much of why Hashem did what He did, we don't understand. He didn't tell us. But we have an emunah. Part of our emunah system is believing that everything that Hashem put into this world, everything that He created, was done with a very specific seder, a very specific order. That's axiom number one. Axiom number two is that in addition to setting up the world with an order, He also gave us instructions in the form of Torah and mitzvos as to how the world should optimally function. So it didn't just that He created it with the Seder, He also told us how should that Seder be maintained. Okay, how should it run? How should it operate? How should it function? In order for the world to function in the right way and to reach whatever goal the world is supposed to reach, we have an instruction manual for how to do that. That's axiom number two. And here's axiom number three. Hashem also implanted a tchuna, a characteristic, a midah, let's call it. He implanted a characteristic within a person, within all of us, that we naturally like seeing things in a certain order, running in accordance with that order. And when things do not run the way they ought to, we feel a natural aversion to that. And we like to do what we can to return it back to its order. We don't like seeing things out of order, and when they're not the way they ought to be. We have a framework for how things ought to be, and it's a natural inclination of a person to want to restore it back to how it ought to be. Right? It's part of our teva. If just lamashal, and forgetting about like the whole world for a second, we all know this from our day-to-day lives. If a person's working in a company, and he hears that there was some scandal in the company, he's going to feel that something wrong happened here. Something is not the way it ought to be. And depending on who he is and his relationship with the person who was involved in the scandal, he might also feel a pull to do something about it. Right? We know on a physiological, biological level, we're certainly built that way. In terms of our bodies have a very, very, very clear way. It's built into our DNA as to how we're supposed to operate. And when something deviates from the way it ought to be, the body has a natural built-in restoration system that is meant to bring us back to proper functioning. Okay? So it's in our psychology, it's in our biology, that we don't like seeing things not the way they're supposed to be, and we want to bring them back the way they're supposed to be. Now, when understanding Pinchas, we can start to understand based on these three points. Pinchas had a very clear sense that what was happening with this terrible chait, with Zimri and with Cusbi, was a clear deviation from Ratzon Hashem. It was a clear, something was going terribly, terribly wrong. You had Klal Yisrael, and the particular chait that he watched, that was happening, was tantamount to the unraveling of Klal Yisrael, right? One of the ways that we unravel is by assimilating, and it was happening at the highest level in the worst way possible. There was a Avodah Zarah involved. I mean, it was really terrible. Pinchas saw that this whole system is going awry, and I have to do something to restore it back onto the proper track. And that's what a kanoi is. A kanoi, which we usually translate as a zealot, as I said, is somebody who stands up, sees something is wrong, and he takes a firm stance to restore whatever was wrong back onto the right path. Okay? That's what a kanoi is. Pinchas had this sense. Something is not going correctly. It's not the way it ought to be. I have to do something about it. And he acted. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a haskama. Hashem said, "Va'Pinchas bekanoet kinati." Not only did Pinchas act out of kina, in a positive sense, but he actually acted in line with Hashem's kina, which is a chiddush, that Hashem can have kina, meaning Hashem also has a sense of the way things ought to be, obviously, and he wants an act sometimes to restore things back to that. Pinchas was in line with that, he was attuned to that, and in line with Hashem's kina, Pinchas acted to restore things back. And not only that, but Pinchas was rewarded with the bris shalom, with a covenant of peace. Now, when you read the psukim, it's a very, very strange reward. Right? If anything, the act of Pinchas was nothing, there was nothing peaceful about it. Right? He speared two people in a gruesome, barbaric manner, and yet he received the covenant of peace. Bris Shalom. How do we understand that? It's very, very strange. Right? The answer is, in line with what we've been saying, is that Shalom is translated sometimes as peace, but it comes from the root, from the word Hashlama. Hashlama means complete, something that is whole. Pinchas saw that if Klal Yisrael continued on the path that they were on, they had potential to break apart and no longer be whole. He restored wholeness to Klal Yisrael by drawing very, very clear lines in the sand. You may not cross this. This is the red line. If somebody crosses this, I'm taking it upon myself, in line with Ratzon Hashem, to restore wholeness and completion back to Klal Yisrael. That's why he got the Bris Shalom. He was a person who gave Hashlama back to Klal Yisrael. That's the positive Midah of Kana'ut. Now, where does this go wrong? And where do we get the kina, which is jealousy and envy? So here's what we need to talk about. We said that kina stems, this midah of kuf nun aleph, stems from having a sense that things are not the way they ought to be. This can get very severely misdirected. If a person looks out at the world and says, things in some places are not how they ought to be, and it's my job to correct it, that's good. If a person looks at himself and he says that I'm not the way that I ought to be, that can become a problem. And let me explain. When we said that Hashem has a very specific order to the whole natural world, and he set things up in a very deliberate way, that's also true of each individual person. In other words, all of us were given a package. And that package includes very specific things. It includes a certain IQ level. It includes a certain physical appearance. It includes certain athletic abilities. It includes certain family situation that you were born into. It includes certain financial situation that you were born into. It includes certain social capacities. And there's so many things to your unique package. When a person looks at his package and says, the package that I got is not the package that I ought to have, he starts becoming jealous. Okay? That's where the problem of jealousy begins. And what naturally begins to happen is that he looks around and he sees people out there in the world who have all the things that he thinks that he's supposed to have. And he develops what a lot of psychologists call if-only mind. If-only mind. If-only mind means where you perpetually walk around with the mindset of, if only I would have this, if only I would be that, if only I were good at this, if only I were as smart as him, if only I had what he has. That's if-only mind. That sense of if-only mind is a sense that what I have is not enough. What Hashem's given to me is not enough for me. Right? There's actually a famous quote that I really like that I wrote down here. It says that envy is the art of counting another fellow's blessings instead of your own. In other words, when we get jealous, it's because we look around and we think, that guy has what I need. And I clearly don't have what I need to have in order to be happy. The Maharal, in another place, in Chiddushi Agados, actually says this. He talks about kina being related to a sense of chisaron and heder. Chisaron meaning lacking, heder meaning something missing. That a person who suffers from kina, and it is something that we suffer from, it's a very painful state to be in, to be jealous, envious of people around us. Maharal says that that person has a certain inner lack, a certain emptiness on the inside. It's actually a pasuk. The pasuk in Mishle is a famous pasuk that says, "Chayi besarim leiv marpei or akav atzamos kina." Pasuk in Mishle says that the kina is a result of rekav atzamos. What's rekav atzamos? Rekav means rotting. Atzamos means bones. Right? When a person's bones are rotting, the result of that is jealousy. What does that mean? The bones are perhaps the most, I'm not sure by biological sense, but it seems to be the most inner part of the person. In other words, you can't get, when we say the bare bones, right? We get down to the bare bones, it's the basic physical structure of the person. It's the innermost part of the person. When that part is rotting, okay, it reflects an inner emptiness. Actually, the word etzem, which means bone, also means atzmiut, etzem. The etzem of something means the essence of the thing, right? If the essence of the thing is rotting, if there's a sense of missing, a sense of lacking on the inside, I don't have what I have, but I don't have what I need on the inside, it's going to be a natural sense of jealousy. I'm going to turn to the outside and look around, and I'm going to feel like, wow, if I only had that. I think this can answer why, one of our questions, as to why Lo Tachmod is in the Aseret HaDibros. In the Aseret HaDibros, we're laying down some of the fundamentals of our Emunah. Okay? Certainly in the beginning. After we get through the most essential things that we have to believe, the Ases and the Lo Ases, the things that we have to believe and the things we have to stay away from, the very last point that we have to affirm our belief in is that everything that Hashem gave to me is exactly what I'm supposed to have. That Hashem has a plan. And Hashem knows that if part of my plan is that I'm supposed to be this smart, and I'm supposed to look just like this, and I'm supposed to have these weaknesses, and I'm supposed to have these strengths, then it must be that that's the plan that Hashem had for me, and it's the right plan. Now, to look out at the world and to say that about Teva and nature is easy, right? We can all look out at the world and say, okay, this is the way Hashem wants the world to be. To look at ourselves and to say, I am the way that I'm supposed to be. Not that I can't work on things, but that the package that I was given is the package that I'm supposed to have. That's really, really hard. There are so many things about our package that we wish were different. We wish we were taller. We wish we were shorter. We wish we were better looking. We wish we, whatever things that, wish we were smarter. We wish we were, all of the things that we look at ourselves and we say, you know what, if I just had that, right? It's so tempting. It's such a seductive line of reasoning. Also because it makes so much sense. Wouldn't it really be better if I was smarter? I'd be able to learn better, right? Wouldn't it really be better if I was as popular? Is that, I mean, it's so seductive because it makes so much sense that it really would be better if I had these things. So the tenth of the Aseret HaDibros is to say, no. Hashem knows better than me, and Hashem knows better than you, what it is that each of us is supposed to have. It's a very, very hard thing to actually take in, and to actually own, and to mean it. On that pasuk of Lo Tachmo, there's a famous Ibn Ezra, you've probably heard of it. The Ibn Ezra brings a mashal of the Kafri and the Bas Melech. You can't talk about Kina and not mention the Ibn Ezra. So the Ibn Ezra says, it's like a mashal of a commoner in a town who is proposed a shidduch to marry the daughter of the king. And the Kafri says, it's totally not shaykh to me. He doesn't even give it a second thought. He doesn't even have a desire to marry the daughter of the king. And says the Ibn Ezra, because he realizes that it's completely not shaykh for him. It's completely not in his world. It's not something that he even wants, because he knows there's no way that he could have that. He's not supposed to have that. Rav Dessler actually takes it one step further. Rav Dessler says, he brings a marshal, he says that, imagine, you know, you walk into a tailor, and the tailor is finishing up a suit that he tailor-made for somebody. And you say, I want that suit, right? You don't look at the size, you don't look at the make, you don't look at exactly how it fits, you just take it. So, says Rav Dessler, you're not going to be happy that way. You're going to be walking around for the rest of your life in a suit that doesn't fit, right? That's exactly what Ibn Ezra is saying, and that's what Rav Dessler is saying, that there's no way to be happy with somebody else's package. As much as you think that if I had what that other person has, I'd be happy, says Ibn Ezra, says the Torah, it's not true. You think you'd be happy because you don't realize that what you have is the only way that you can possibly reach happiness. It's not possible that you could try on somebody else's package that wasn't tailor-made for you, and then you could feel good at the end. There's actually a famous story that's brought down a few places by Rabbi Saul Salanter. Saul Salanter was approached by one of his main Talmidim, Rav Naftali Amsterdam. And Rav Naftali said to Rav Yisrael, he said to him, you know, it's not fair. If I would only have the brain of the Shagas Aryeh, and if I would only have the heart of the Baal Yisod V'Shor Shavoda, and if I would only have your Midos, Rabbi, then I could really serve Hashem. Then I could really be something. And Rabbi Yisrael answered him, he said, my dear Naftali, he said, it's only with your head and with your heart and with your Midos that you can properly serve Hashem. Now, I think that this is a very, very difficult avoda. Kina is one of those things that when we experience it, we know how difficult it can be. There's actually a sefer, the Mikveh Yisrael, which I don't know much about, but it's written by Rav Yisrael Najara. There's a street in Yerushalayim named after him. He talks about how kina is such a painful midah because it can be totally internal. It's not something that you see on a person. A person can be writhing in jealousy, and you wouldn't know it, because it's something in the lathe, it's something in the heart, right? And also for that reason, says the Mikveh Yisrael, we can also feel not so bad about it, right? Because it isn't embarrassing to feel kina. You don't show it on your sleeve. Nobody knows that you're jealous. So you feel, okay, it's something on the inside, something internal. But it's very, very painful. The Chachma Musar, which is Rav Simcha Zissel, he actually teaches the pasuk of a rakava tzamus kina in a different way. Not the way we said it before, that when there's a kind of an emptiness on the inside, it results in kina. He says, no, kina results in an inner emptiness. Kina eats away at your bones. That when a person suffers from kina, it eats him on the inside. It's like living in a self-made jail, because all you see around you are the things that you don't have. And there's a sense, a very, very tangible sense of emptiness. I think with this, we can answer also the second question that we had. The second question was the Mishnah in Avos that said that kina is one of the things that takes you out of the world. The Magen Mimezrich says that kina one of the reasons it takes you out of the world is because the world that that Mishnah is talking about is your own world, the Olam Katan of each person. And the Olam Katan, the only way to have your world and to feel comfortable in your world is to be satisfied with what you have and to thrive and be alive within what you have. The Magen Mimezer says that when you suffer from kinah, it's motzi es ha'adam me'olamo. It takes him out of his world. He's no longer living as himself. He's wishing that he were somebody else. You cannot be happy that way, and you also can't live your own life that way. Right? There's almost nothing sadder than a person who spends his whole life wishing that he were living somebody else's life. Right? It's one of the most sad things in the world to see a person whose whole life is spent thinking, I wish I could just be like that guy in whatever area. You're not living in your Olam Katan, says the Maggid. And since you're not living in your Olam Katan, kina is motzi oto min ha'olam. It's actually mefurish in the pasuk. The pasuk we said before for Mishle, so we said the second half of the pasuk is urakav atzamos kina, right? That the rotting of the bones leads to kina, or kina leads to rotting of the bones. The first half of that pasuk says chayi basarim lev marpe, that a lev, the heart, is what brings the flesh to life. In other words, there's actually a yisod, the Rabbeinu Bachai brings a yisod, where he says that every pasuk in Mishle, I haven't done the research myself, but I trust Rabbeinu Bachai, he says that the pasukim in Mishle, actually, each pasuk, one half corresponds to the other. They're opposites and they're parallels to one another. So he says that the second half of the pasuk is the opposite of the first half. The second half is talking about kinah. What's the opposite of kinah? So says Rabbeinu Bachai, it's the first half. The first half is that the heart, right? The heart is what brings the flesh to life, is what brings the person to life, meaning that the kinah is the absence of feeling settled in your own body, right? The heart, when a person is, the heart often represents a sense of self. That's the lev, sort of the core of the person in Chazal and Mefarshim. When you have lev, you have the core of the person. The opposite of that is missing your core, and that's what kinah is. Feeling like I'm missing my core because what I need is on the outside of me. Okay. I also just wanted to point out that as I was thinking about this shiur and this topic, I couldn't help but realize that in these parshios of Moshe and Aaron, it's really the antidote to kinah, right? Moshe and Aaron, it's so striking that when Moshe gets the mantle of leadership, right, he goes through this whole give and take with Hashem. It shouldn't be me, maybe it's just somebody else. And he says, finally, what Rashi explains is what it finally boils down to is that he says, really, Aaron should have it. And Hashem says to him, don't worry. The Rachav Samach Balibo. Aaron is going to be happy for you. Right? Which I was thinking about, the Mefarshim that point out that Moshe was sort of the head of Klal Yisrael and Aaron was sort of the lave of Klal Yisrael. And together, they led Klal Yisrael. Aaron was lave. He had a lave shalim. A lev shalim is a person who's not capable of kinah. He had no jealousy to Moshe, which is unbelievable. He was the older brother. He was the older brother, and he should have gotten the mantle of leadership, or one could have said, but it went to Moshe. And Aaron, when he saw Moshe, gave him a hug and a kiss, and he said, I'm so happy for you. The only way that was possible for Aaron is because he felt sure of himself. He felt happy with what he had. He had a full lev. His core was intact. Just very fascinating to see it play out in the opposite way with Moshe and Aaron in these parshas. I think we can easily see how kinah starts to escalate. This is where I said there's a bit of a distinction between envy and jealousy. I won't get too much into that, but for those who are interested, envy is often used to mean that I want what somebody else has, not that I don't want him to have it, but when I see something that somebody else has, I also want to have that thing. Jealousy is already when it starts to shift a little bit, and it becomes, I don't even want him to have it anymore, right? And how does that happen? How does one make that, how does that move in that direction? I think it's not so hard to see. Because when a person feels that there's something lacking in himself, that something is missing, so everybody around him that has that thing accentuates that pain. Right? It's harder for me to be around people who have the thing that I'm missing. Right, I could perhaps ignore the fact that I feel I'm missing what I would like to have, right? But the moment that I see this other guy who's excelling in this, or who he has that, or something else that I would want, it's so much harder for me, right? And I start to think to myself, you know what? At least I wish that he didn't have it. And then we can easily see how it's just one step to sinna, starting to hate that person, right, for having that thing that you wish that you had. Okay? So kin is not something that's static. It does escalate. It does go in gradations. I want to take it one more step. Okay? There's a few other parashas in the Torah of Kina. We know of Korach. We know Yosef and his brothers. And of course we know of Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel is perhaps the place that a lot of Mepharshim talk about Kina. And I think there's another Knetch here. I think there's another step we have to go in understanding what Kina is about. So any questions so far? Are we good? Okay. So Cain and Hevel. We know what happened in the story of Cain and Hevel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted Hevel's korban, and he didn't accept Cain's korban. Cain was very, very distraught about this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says something to Cain, which we have to understand. He says to Cain, when he sees that Cain is very distraught over not having had his korban received, Hashem says, "Lama charalach v'lama nafu panecha haloim tetiv se'et v'im lo tetiv l'petach hatat raveitz." Why is your face fallen? Why are you so upset? If you do better, that will count. Right? Haloim tetiv se'et. If you do better, that will count. That will raise itself up. In other words, what's Hashem saying to Cain? What Hashem is saying to Cain is that it's true that you made a mistake. But there is something that you can do about it. The answer to your problem does not lie with your brother. Hevel has nothing to do with this. It is in your power to fix the mistake that you made. This is a very, very important nekuda here. That sometimes we refrain from doing what we would need to do to improve our situation. And instead, we opt to be jealous of the person who got it right. In other words, sometimes the remedy for kina is what we've been saying until now, that I have to be accepting of the package that I was given and not wish that I had something else. But sometimes the remedy for kina is that there is something within our power that we need to improve and need to work on. And instead of looking at that thing, we look at the person who got it right and we say, "Ah, I wish I had that." Right? And it's fascinating that if you'll do a study on your own selves, very often the thing that you're jealous of in somebody else is the very thing that you need to work on yourself. Right? It bothers you the most when you see it in somebody else because you know deep down that in that area I'm lacking. Not that I'm lacking in that Hashem didn't give me what I'm supposed to have. I'm lacking in the sense that I need to be fixing something in myself. I need to be working on something in myself. I need to improve on something in myself. Right? And I've been lax in that. I haven't taken responsibility for what I need to improve. And that's why it bothers me so much when that other guy has gotten it right. This is another little piece of kinna. Okay? And again, just to be clear, what we're saying right now is not just the fact that I have to be mekabel and accept the package that I was given. But sometimes what Hashem is pointing out to us is exactly what he's pointing out to with Cain. Sometimes what Hashem is saying to us is that look at yourself. Right? Don't turn your eyes outward to somebody else. Don't count another person's blessings. Realize that it's within your power to improve your situation. And if you take responsibility for your own situation, as Cain should have, right? Haloim tetiv se'et. Things could be better for you. Right? The answer, the remedy to your problem lies within yourself. It doesn't lie with anybody else. Take responsibility for what you need to work on in yourself. Now, I want to think about how we can work on kina. We've mentioned a lot of points about kina. We mentioned about what it is. We've defined it. We've talked about how terrible it is, what the yesod is of kina. How do we work on it? And I want to suggest two ideas of how we can work on it. One idea you can find in Rav Kook. Rav Kook has a very, very beautiful piece when he talks about the bracha of She'asa li kol tzarchi, the bracha that we say every single morning, that Hashem made for me everything that I need. And I want to read you a very loose translation of what Rav Kook says on those words. When a person experiences himself standing as he is, alive, he knows with certainty that everything he needs for his own goodness was created for him by Hashem. There's no difference between his disadvantages and his advantages. They are all the needs of man. And everything that he truly requires to reach the purpose of his life was made for him out of the compassion of his merciful Father. Whether in matters related to our physical existence or in matters related to our spiritual existence, every single Jewish person can bless upon this with a wise heart. She'asa li kol tzarki, who made for me everything that I need. In other words, says Rav Kook, if you really concentrate and you really meditate on this bracha, she'asa li kol tzarki, that Hashem made for me every single morning, we proclaim quietly to ourselves and to Hashem that I believe firmly that everything that I need, I already have. That you've made for me everything I could possibly need. And that includes my weaknesses. That includes my challenges. It certainly includes my strengths. And it includes my talents. It includes the hard things in my life. And it includes the good things in my life. The package that you gave me, Hashem, is the package I'm supposed to have. I don't want anybody else's package. Because it's only with this package that I could ever be truly happy. Hashem, you prepared for me all the tools that I need to reach my goal and to reach contentment and to reach fulfillment. If I look at my life and I see what I've been given, then I'll be able to get there. Shasa li kol tzarki. Yeah.
So then why do we doubt for things that we don't have? Mm-hmm. If we need them, Hashem would have given them.
Right. So, it's a very good question. Part of why we daven for things is not because we think that we need to convince Hashem to give us things. Like, he hasn't been convinced yet, but, you know, if we say the right words, he'll be convinced. The tefillah process is supposed to be a transformative process for us, right? We're improving ourselves when we daven. And in the areas that we can improve, we're responsible to do that. The areas that we can't change are the areas that we have to accept. So tefillah, like if we ask for, you know, chonein hadat, okay? So we want to make ourselves, we want to change ourselves, Hashem will give us das, through making ourselves more, better receptacles for that das. In other words, that's an area we have to improve ourselves and work on ourselves in order to get the Shefa and the Bracha that Hashem wants to give us. But we should not be asking for a higher IQ, let's say, or a different brain, right? Within the capacity of what my brain and my lev can do, I have to try to transform myself, and tefillah is part of transforming. We talked about this once here before, that how ratzon, changing what we want, is part of how we transform ourselves. And tefillah does that. But to say that if I had somebody else's brain, I'd be better off, that's kfira. That we can't say. Okay? So that's point number one. We can work on kina by really focusing on what we have and realizing that it's only through what we have that we could possibly be happy, and that Hashem gave us everything that we already need. Again, within that, we have to work on things. But to change our package, that we're not supposed to ask for, and again, it wouldn't be right for us. The second thing I think that we can work on is when it comes to the area of comparing ourselves to other people. The Ravolbi talks about kina, and he brings two Maram Komos I think are very, very important. One of them is the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh is talking about the story of Kayin and Hevel. He says something very interesting. He says that when Hashem said to Kayin, Haloim Tetiv Se'et, that if you improve yourself, things will be okay, just take responsibility. So says the Or HaChaim like this, Im Tiem B'chinas HaTov, if you, Kayin, do what is right, Kol Ma'asecha Shor Aleichem, Shor Aleim B'chinas HaTov, U'me'atzman Hebit Nasim, then everything that you do will have tov to it, and it will stand on its own. Ki ha-kedusha eina tzricha la-acherim. Because kedusha, things that are good, does not need the haskama of other people. I want to just focus on this point for a second. One way that we can stop being jealous is when we realize that the things that I do that are good, the things that I do that are worthwhile, that have value, are good whether or not anybody else says so. There's such a thing called kedusha that has inherent value, inherent worth. The Or Chaim is saying that what Hashem said to Kayin is that you have an ability here to do something that's kadosh, to bring another korban. Right? You can do a maisa tov. And a maisa tov does not need anybody else's haskama. One of the ways that we can work on not being jealous is by realizing that I don't need to be anybody else or do as well as anybody else in order for what I do to have worth. Does that make sense? I don't need to do anything as well as anybody else in order for what I do to have worth. What I do, if it was tov, then it has worth. If I did something kadosh, then it has value. In and of itself, not compared to anybody else. It's not a relative. It's not a game. It's not a relative, right? It's not that if I chop more of shir than somebody else, or if I get more of mar makomos, or if I make more money, or if I get more things, whatever it is, if the things that I do are valuable in and of themselves, then Hashem will give His stamp of approval to that thing, and it lasts. It's good, just because it is. Even if nobody else says so, and even if it isn't as good as what anybody else did. If it's the right thing for you to do, if you put your all into it, and it was tov, then it's tov. You don't need anything else or anybody else to say so. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu knows it. So one of the Maramakon Ravobi brings, which I think is in line with this, is the Gemara Brachos, which is important to know, is talking about passing on the mantle of leadership from Shmuel to Shaul. And the Gemara says there, Ein Malchus Nogat V'Chaverta Afilu Kamali Neima, which is really in line with what we've been saying, that every Malchus stands in and of itself, and doesn't cross over to anybody else's malchus. Where one malchus ends, after that point, the next malchus begins. Okay, Ravolbi talks about this not only in Malchios of Klal Yisrael, but as far as each person being the melech over himself. Every one of us has our own malchus. Every one of us has our own inner kingdom. And there's no malchus that takes the place of anybody else's malchus. You have your own kingdom. And in your own kingdom, you stand alone. And in your kingdom, you reign and you rule supreme. And in your kingdom, you can produce good things. Right? When it says that Ein Malchus Nogat Bechaverta, no Malchus touches anybody else's Malchus, it means that no two people take up the same space. Physically and also spiritually. The spiritual space that you take up is your own mark and your own stamp on the world. It has nothing to do with being better or worse or comparing oneself to where anybody else is. I want to make two more points and finish with that. One point is that once we have worked on kenna, and we feel like we've made progress in it, I think we can also get to the level where we can use kenna in a very positive way, not only the way Pinchas did, being a kenai, but also in a different way. There's a statement brought down in Chazal in Bava Basra, kenna sofrim tar b'chachma. Kina of Sofrim, having jealousy of Talmidei Chachamim, tar bechachma, it generates chachma. Meaning what? We've said that kina is looking outside at what somebody else has and saying that I want that because what I have isn't good enough. That's a very, very painful feeling. But when a person is full, when a person is happy, when he's satisfied with what he has, and he is resting in that knowledge that what I have is good, then looking out at somebody else and seeing what they have is a very positive thing. Why? So our Simcha Zissel, again, he says what the difference is. He says, when you look out at somebody else and you say, I see what that guy has and I want to be like him, that's no good. But if you look at another person and you say, this person represents a certain mila. He represents something good. And I want to have that thing too in my own life. So then it's good to look at what other people have. For instance, you have a role model. And this role model, he is tremendous. He's really a tremendous Baal Chesed. Okay? So a person who is jealous might say that I feel like, you know, I'm not good enough. And I look at this guy and he's a Baal Chesed. I'm jealous of him or I'm envious of him. But let's say I'm not coming from that place, right? And this person, this role model, who's a real Baal Chesed, he stands out to me as a person who represents a certain value of Chesed, okay? So I can learn from him, and I can say, wow, it's so incredible to have Chesed in your life. I want to learn from that and be like that too. That's a positive motivation. Kina Sofrim. Kina Sofrim means, you look at a Talmid Chacham, and you say, wow, look at this amazing amount of Torah knowledge. It's not that I want to be like him and I'm unhappy for him that he has what he has. No. It's that when I look at him, I realize how beautiful Torah is. And I realize how wonderful Torah is and how much I want that too in my own life. Okay? So Rav Simcha says, if you look at a person in that way, so then looking at people is a very good thing. You can learn from lots of people out there in the world for all the good things that they represent. That's Kinas Tov from Tarba Chachma. This is also, just to point out, the Medrash points out this is exactly what happened between Rachel and Leah. The Pasuk says, "Vatzakani Rachel ba'achuta," that Rachel was jealous of Leah. The Medrash fills that in there, and it says that she was mekane her meisim tovim. She wasn't jealous, I mean, at the Pasuk Peshad, you could say she was jealous of the children that she had, right? The Medrash says, no, she was jealous of Leah's good deeds, and it's seen as a good thing in the Midrashim. At least the way the Midrashim learned that Pasuk is that she saw in Leah a Meisim Tovim. And she said, I want those Meisim Tovim too for myself. Okay. So that's Kina in a positive sense. And I want to end off with just one last point, and that's really it. The Navi says that, and maybe there's also a bracha for us, I don't know. The Navi, Yeshayahu, says in Perek Yud Aleph, he's talking about what's going to happen in the end of days. This is the famous Navi where it says Gar Zev and Keves and everything that's going to happen after Mashiach comes. And he says something unbelievable. V'sara kinas Ephraim v'tzora Yehuda yekareitu, that one of the hallmarks of the end of days, Lasid Lavo, is going to be a removal of all kina. Ephraim lo yekane et Yehuda. The Yehuda lo yatsur et Ephraim. Ephraim's not going to be jealous of Yehuda anymore. And Yehuda is not going to oppress Ephraim. In other words, one of the things that we're looking forward to in when there's kibbutz galios, when there's a ingathering of the exiles, is not only that geographically we're all going to be together. It's kind of everybody coming home. It's not just that. It's that we're all going to know and respect one another's place. We're all going to be happy, genuinely happy, to see each other. And all the goodness that we see in one another, we're going to be happy that one another has that goodness. The Shem Yishmuel says, and I'll finish with this point, that one of the ways that we have kinah, unfortunately, is by feelings of separateness. When we feel separate from one another, we naturally compete. You know, as opposed to, let's say, the human body. The human body is so obviously one whole. You'll never have an ear being jealous of an elbow or a toe being jealous of a finger. Oh, if only I could do what a finger could do, that would be amazing, you know? Or if my nose could hear, then I would be fine. It's just not possible. Because all the parts of the body are wired in such a way that they know what they're supposed to do, and they know that they need one another in order to function as a whole. Lasid Lavo, that's going to happen to all of us. What's going to happen to all of us, we're going to look out at Klal Yisrael and we're going to say, wow, you have your package, I'm so happy for you. And you have your package, I'm so happy for you. And I have my package, I'm really happy about that too. That's what we're hoping for. And just like everything that's meant to happen, Ma'achris Hayamim, we're supposed to try to bring that as much as we can now, this is something that is within our reach to fix, right? Within each one of our own personal worlds, we do have an ability to be genuinely happy for one another and for the packages that each one of us was given. I'll just end by saying that Libi Omerli, my heart tells me that this is a sugya that my father would have really appreciated. The importance of being your own person, the importance of not being jealous or wanting what anybody else has. I think that he was a person who very much strived to be his own person. And it's my real hope that the words of Torah that we're sharing here should be an inspiration for all of us, and that they should be serve as a real aliyah for his neshama, because I know that it was a neshama that really believed in the beauty of each person and really believed that Hashem had a plan for each one of us, and if we only would realize it, it would lead us to true happiness. So thank you all very much for listening. This is a